And good evening once again, and welcome to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Tom Candela. Now, before we begin tonight's program, I'd like to take just a moment to remind you that today marks the very beginning of Radio Catskill's Summer Fun Drive. Programs like Curtain Call exist because listeners believe that local stories, local artists, and the creative spirit of our region are worth celebrating and preserving. Public radio is a vital public service, and in rural communities like ours, with fewer news outlets and greater distances between neighbors, having a trusted local voice matters now more than ever. So when you support Radio Catskill, you're helping ensure that everyone in our community stays connected and informed through fact-based local journalism, regional arts and culture, and the many voices that make our area unique. If Curtain Call has ever introduced you to a new artist or inspired you to attend a local performance or simply reminded you of the extraordinary creative community we call home, I hope you'll consider making a contribution today by visiting our website at wjffradio.org. Now, speaking of great stories, every one of us has moments that quietly change the direction of our lives. Sometimes they arrive through great success, sometimes through disappointment, sometimes through chance encounter. And sometimes they come in ways we simply can't explain. Whatever their source, those moments have a way of shaping who we become. And for artists, they often become the stories they feel compelled to tell. Tonight's guest has spent a lifetime transforming experience into art. From Broadway to Hollywood, journalism to photography, radio to the stage, Jonathan Charles Fox has continually found new ways to tell stories, never losing sight of the person behind them. His newest one-man performance, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind, may begin with an extraordinary experience from decades ago. But as you'll soon discover, it's really another opportunity to spend an evening with one of our region's most gifted storytellers. So, sit back, relax, and prepare for your own close encounter with one of the Catskills' finest storytellers. My conversation with Jonathan Charles Fox begins right now. My guest this evening is no stranger to Curtain Call. When Jonathan Charles Fox first joined me, we explored his remarkable creative journey that carried him from a young boy captivated by the theater to Broadway, to Hollywood, to journalism, photography, radio, and ultimately becoming one of the Catskills' most recognizable advocates for the arts. Whether through his weekly In My Humble Opinion column, his award-winning photography, his radio work, or his deeply personal one-man performances, Jonathan has an extraordinary ability to invite us into his world. Jonathan returns to the stage this week, July 11th, over at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center with a brand new autobiographical performance, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind. Now, this promises to be much more than a story about unexplained lights in the sky. Like Operation Jonathan, it's another opportunity to spend an evening with one of our region's finest storytellers as he opens up yet another window into the life that has never stopped evolving. And joining him, of course, once again, that dog Gidget, Jonathan. And Gidget, I want to welcome you back to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much. I never thought I'd be invited back after the first time, so I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it went wonderfully. It we sure had such did. A great conversation.
People are still coming up to me, having heard your show, and repeating what you just said, which is they learned some things about me that they had no idea.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, last time you were here, we did have a very deep conversation. We started from when you were a young boy, 5 or 6 years old, I think you said. You were on stage. It snowed on stage, yep. And you were just amazed by it.
Oh,
and
you remember.
Of course, of course. And that sort of started a life in the theater for you. And we went through your life stages, all the different things that you kept reinventing yourself as life's inroads changed for you, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
As it were.
As it were. And now, having had the privilege of seeing Operation Jonathan, I learned even more about you that I didn't know. Certainly, you had a lot of very personal stories in that show.
I did.
It was really beautifully done.
Thank you.
The titles of your shows, Operation Jonathan, and the next one, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind, don't really tell the whole story.
That's the intent.
That's the intent. It simply becomes a doorway through which you invite us into this chapter of your life. So, and my question was... which you just answered. Was that your intention?
It absolutely is. One of the things I love about spending time with you, Tom, is that you get me. You really get me. Yeah. And I appreciate that so much. I never want to telegraph too much.
Right.
And sometimes the title of a show can be almost a double entendre. Mm-hmm. But I also want to intrigue people and get them interested. Because one of the things that's so important to me is that I do something different every single time. Otherwise, why would people come back?
Yeah.
So I've never repeated a show, save for Dirty Laundry at the DVAA years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's important to me. I mean, I only do one or two of these a year that people are interested, or at least I've caught their interest before they buy tickets.
Well, I mm-hmm. didn't get the opportunity to see Dirty Laundry, but I did see Operation Jonathan, and I got to speak with some of the audience members.
Did you?
Yeah, after the show. I interviewed them for a segment on this show called The Roving Thespian. I got comments like, I just learned things about Jonathan I had never known before. When he talks about his life, he feels like he's talking to me personally.
That's the greatest compliment I can ever get.
It is, and I've always found that in your article for The River Reporter. In my humble opinion. But again, as far as intent is concerned, do you actually think about that when you're telling these stories, that you make it so personal and it really is personal stuff you're talking about?
Well, that's an interesting question, Tommy. First, the short answer is no. I don't think about that. It happens to be my writing style, which, of course, I developed over a period of many years. I've been writing, in my humble opinion, for 25 years.
Wow.
And I've been contributing it to The River Reporter for 17 come this week. So, no. I write the way I write, and the fact that it comes across on a personal level is exactly my desire. But I don't sit there and say, well, I'm going to try and get somebody. No, I just do what I do. Yeah. And if I'm very fortunate, it resonates with some people.
Yeah, it's the way it comes out, too. It's almost like you have these asides in your writing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're writing something, you have a thought, and then you have this little comment on your thought. And that's the kind of thing that's very conversational.
Thank you.
And I feel that when I'm reading your stories, that you have these little comments and asides, sometimes you even put them in parentheses, that I think helps to get that feeling, to give us that.
You took the word out of my mouth. Aside from, in my humble opinion, I wrote a column years ago for Green Door Magazine, which was based here in Liberty, New York. It's kind of a side gig. And that column was called Parenthetically Speaking.
Oh.
Yeah, because I do speak parenthetically a lot. Mm-hmm. So I see that you pick up on that, but I do it a lot. It is a device I use because it's exactly the point of using parentheses.
Yeah,
it's an aside.
It works. But why do you think it connects with people so deeply?
That's a question I'm not sure I can answer. I do know that as a writer, I have what's called a particular writer's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
my voice. It's the one you're hearing now. It's the one we share when we converse outside of the studio. That's my take on the world. The fact that I'm able to translate that into the written word, that's where the magic happens, I think.
Yeah.
Because I don't, it's the same thing when somebody says, oh, I read that and it was really funny. Did you intend it to be? I don't sit down and say, let me do something funny. I just do what I do.
Right.
And if it tickles a funny bone or if it affects you in any way, any kind of emotion whatsoever, I feel really fortunate and validated.
Yeah. But when you're writing these shows, and I assume to some degree you're writing them or know something that you're going to talk
That's
about.
That's true. Of course, okay. I have a loose outline.
A loose outline. Are there ever times where you think something happens in your life and you think, oh, that's got to go in my next show? Okay.
No, okay. That never happens. The magic of putting a show together, a one-man show together, happens in the weeks or months, possibly, prior to that event. That never occurs to me. If I have an experience in life and say, oh, this would be interesting. No, I'm not very woo-woo, but I think that's where divine inspiration comes from. Dirty Laundry is a perfect example. I was out by the fire pit folding T-shirts, and a friend was with me. So I pulled out a T-shirt and showed it to her, and I was folding it up, and she said, well, where's that from? I said, oh, from the Apple Butter Festival in Amish country or something. And then I did another T-shirt, and she said, well, what's that one all about? I'm like, oh, well, I went to Italy. I went to the Tower of Pisa. Yeah. And about the third or fourth T-shirt in, I said, oh, this is a show.
This is a show. Okay.
Rather than buying a T-shirt that has the Tower of Pisa on it, saying, I wonder if I can build a show around this. It comes kind of organically.
Sure.
So. And the one you were just at, well, at recently, Operation Jonathan, was spawned by me seeing a copy of the Operation game from our youth.
Yeah.
Where you had to take the tweezers. I saw that guy, the Operation guy. I said, you know what? I've had a lot of medical issues in my life. Yeah. And maybe I could use this guy, the cartoon operation guy, as a jumping off point to tell some stories.
Yeah.
Because I said, well, I have a story about a broken bone. I have a story about this. I have a story about that. And that's how that came to be.
Yeah. And it really worked. And you used another tool, if you will, in the pulling the ideas out of a hat. You had a bunch of ideas and there are a bunch of, I guess, storylines. And you would pull something out of a hat and it would say, take out wrenched ankle or whatever it was.
Right.
And you would go into a story of how you wrenched your ankle or broke your ankle. So none of that was really planned you had a plan. The loose plan. Yeah, loose plan.
I never know what's going to pop up. And of course, there were a bunch of cards in the hat. But also, and it's part of the tightrope of doing these things, I never quite know how it's going to go down. And I'm always very nervous that it's going to just keep going down and never up. But a lot of it depends on the audience and the energy and the people who come in. And I'm sure you noted in the last show in Operation Jonathan, I really spoke to the audience.
You did.
And that feeds me. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it feeds them a little bit and we feed off each other. And if we're fortunate, the planets align and we have a fun time.
We've just watched Jonathan Charles Fox do Operation Jonathan. I'm here with Beverly Starner. Beverly, what'd you think of the show tonight?
He's a gem. He just brings light and love and joy, and we are just grateful to have him here.
What did you learn about Jonathan tonight that you didn't know prior to coming here?
That he could do it for so long, that he could stand up on the stage and just go on with these marvelous, just funny stories about his life that he reveals. So he's both very honest and very entertaining.
Overall, what would you say to Jonathan? He was standing right in front of you right now.
I just have to hug him. That's the only thing. He knows who he is. He knows how loved he is by us all and what a treasure he is, and just brings a lot of joy.
Excellent. And the way he writes is just, it feels like he's talking to you.
He belongs to us. I think that's it. We belong to each other. We, the community, belong to him, and he belongs to us, and aren't we privileged?
Not only did you speak to the audience, but the audience spoke to you.
Correct.
As well. So there was that give and take between you and the audience on stage, and you have to deal with that, because it's like any kind of stand-up routine where you get that one guy in the back who's always throwing something in. There was that guy there.
There was that guy. And and fortunately, I'm not afraid to talk to people, and they seem to be willing to speak with me as well. But this goes with your question. That experience of having the audience really close to me and seeing them lit up, and I could see their faces and I could pick people I knew out of the crowd, gave birth to probably my next show, which will be called Crowdwork.
Crowdwork. So you already got another show.
Okay. I have a booklet, and I have ideas of something maybe I could develop, and I just write them down, and then it either happens or it doesn't.
All right. Are there times when you say, I'm not going to include that one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Right. Not every idea is a gem.
Okay.
And sometimes I only find that out on stage under the lights.
Oh, really?
Like, oh, this wasn't a great idea. But that's when you have to pivot.
Yeah. Okay. You pivot to another story.
Yeah.
But there's none that are so personal that you say, I just can't do it.
Well, no. You know what? The last show, I did a show last year, which is why I'm returning to the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center on July 11th. What was it called? I don't even know what it was called. Oh, Hurleyville. Get Off My Lawn in
Get
Hurleyville.
Get Off My Lawn. That's
and that
right.
was about the aging process. Mm-hmm. And because it's not scripted, anything can happen, mm-hmm. including feeding off the audience, including the magnificent Chuck Vassallo, who's always behind me somewhere underscoring the event. And I wound up telling stories I had not planned to tell. And I think that's part of your question.
Yes.
And they weren't all yuck fests. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times I went to kind of a dark place that I wasn't planning to go to. I didn't expect to go to. But because it's not scripted, my head took me there.
Yeah.
And honestly, it upset me. People were getting another glimpse into me, another side of Jonathan Charles Fox that they wouldn't have expected, and I certainly hadn't planned to share. And yet it happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because at the Operation Jonathan performance over at the Arts Nest,
yeah.
there were some deeply personal stories there as well.
Well, there always are, but that doesn't mean they're all that dark.
Okay. All right. But they worked, and the audience was with you throughout.
Thankfully.
And I think that one of the comments that I was getting about hearing your stories, that it opened up a window into your life that they were unaware of, I think speaks to the fact that they were with you, that they weren't offended or
Correct.
Didn't think it was too,
thankfully.
Too personal or why would he ever bring that up?
Yep, yep.
Any of that. For you in your life, there were some cringe moments, but I don't think it was a cringe moment for the audience.
Well, I'd like to think there wasn't either, but that's exactly where the tightrope effect comes in.
Mm.
Because I never quite know what's going to happen. And once I get into something, I gotta have a beginning, a middle, and an end, whether it's a 5-minute piece or a 12-minute piece. And once I'm there, I have to see it through. So I've been very fortunate that people have taken that ride with me.
Yeah. So basically, you have an idea of where you'd like to go. You have these stories. Maybe you have 20 of them. And you think, I'll probably get to 10.
That's exactly right.
But you have the 20.
Correct.
So if one of them starts to fall short or it's not working, you can pivot to another story or to another aspect of the same story, perhaps.
That's absolutely correct. And mm-hmm. again, I have to credit Chuck Vassallo with some of that because he is my partner in crime. We have breakfast maybe a week beforehand. Okay. We discuss it all. He looks for some cues based on what we've discussed. But he's kind of ad-libbing. In the same way I am, but I know that he's my anchor, so I can turn to him and say, Chuck, where am I going with this? And he'll play a line from a song and go, oh, right.
And if you're just tuning in, folks, I'm Tom Candela, and you're listening to Curtain Call. We're talking with Jonathan Charles Fox, particularly about his new upcoming show, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind, which is going to be performed one night only, on July 11th over at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. And you hear there in the background is that dog Gidget looking for a little snack, perhaps, or a little bit more wetting her whistle. So let's talk about that show, because I'm looking at your little card here. Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind. Of course, the name in itself gives us an idea of what this could be about.
Right.
I had the opportunity to watch a documentary that you appeared in regards to your experience back in the day.
Correct.
Okay, so there were 10 friends and yourself.
Yep.
You were all actors. You would have these little get-togethers on Catalina Island.
Mm-hmm.
So you would make these trips. And this one particular trip, you were celebrating the movie Steven Spielberg's E.T., which
Correct.
I guess had just come out. And you were having an E.T. party on this island. And you kind of dressed up.
It was a party.
Yeah. You have a story out of that experience. But why now? Why is this story, some 40 years later, finding its audience now?
Another good question. You're very good at what you do. Why now? First of all, I'm of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
Secondarily, there, as you pointed out, there were 11 people altogether having
an experience
I'll be talking about. Not everybody wanted that experience to be happening. But at this point, because of the documentary you referred to, I had to contact all of those people, I think 44 years ago, I think it was, and get their permission to even mention their name.
Okay.
For me, one of the things that's interesting about doing this particular evening is that it's a departure for me because, as you've pointed out and as we've discussed before, I tell a number of stories that might be loosely based on a topic. This is kind of one big story, mm-hmm. which separates it from the other shows I've done, but also is going to definitely incorporate a Q&A session afterwards, which we have arranged for.
Oh, great.
Because I think there will be questions.
I think so.
I think there are more questions than answers mm-hmm. to this particular event. And why now? I'm going back to why now. The issue, the subject matter, is in the public eye and has been for a little while now. And there are a certain few people who know that I had this experience. So it's kind of the story that has legs. It won't die. And it affected me very deeply. For my entire life, from that moment until this moment now.
Okay, so that's really why. I mean, that's the underlying thing there.
Correct.
Again, is there is a story to be told, certainly, about the experience itself, but it beyond the experience itself.
How it affected
it's how it affected you and how it affected perhaps other people in your group.
Absolutely, but it colored my consciousness in a way. I mean, my world kind of tilted on its axis. I have described it that way. I thought I knew what the world was all about.
Yeah.
In my own way.
Yeah.
And having an extraordinary experience such as this really altered my perception of reality.
Of course, of course. And when you see something like this or you experience something like this, not saying what it is, but you know, experience that, it really, you really have to step back and say, well, hold on. Now this kind of changes everything.
A good example of that, Tom, is many, many, many years ago. I'm going to say 25 maybe more years ago, there was a meteorite discovered, I think in Alaska, that some people got a hold of, some scientists, and were able to take a look at it and determine that it came from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to find what looked like some residue or evidence of microbial life in that rock, which is goodness knows how many millions of years old.
Yeah.
At that time, the Pope made a declaration to his audience and said, apparently this has happened, and it looks like maybe there was life elsewhere, which some religions say was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pope addressed the Catholic community and said, if this is true, please keep in mind that God is everywhere.
Mm.
And God did that too, which was a reversal of attention. And
talk about a pivot.
That really hit me hard. I said, if the Pope is coming out and saying this, they must know something we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Well, it's an interesting topic. It is timely, of course, has nothing to do with your time of the show, bringing that, because this has actually been going on now for a year or two.
Yeah.
Now we're hearing more and more about these
correct
experiences, and we're actually seeing evidence now to make a lot of people say, wow, well, really think about these things.
Well, and it's funny because you mentioned, you're always one step ahead of me, because I had the experience that I did have, which I will be sharing with audiences mm-hmm. at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center on July 11th at 8 p.m. Doors open at 7. It really moved me in a way. I don't want to give too much away either. What I can say is I have no idea what happened. What I can say is if somebody says, oh, was that a light? No, it wasn't a light in the sky. That's what made it a life-changing moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was, but we can talk about it together on July 11th.
Yeah, it's certainly intriguing just listening to you now and saying, well, folks out there, I want to go and hear what Jonathan has to say.
Well, I
what
sure
was
hope
this
so.
Experience?
I certainly hope so. And just to whet their appetite a little bit more, I did discuss it with the man himself, Steven Spielberg, and I had a conversation about it.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that after the break. I'm Tom Candela. This is Curtain Call, and we've been speaking with Jonathan Charles Fox about his upcoming performance, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind, happening at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center on July 11th. We're going to take a quick break and we'll get back to more in depth about this show and other aspects of Jonathan's life right after this. Stick with us. There's much more to come.
Hey, I'm Jen Largess, host of This Old House Radio Hour. Every week we bring you stories, skills, and heart that make a house a home. From smart kitchens to old barns, we cover it all. But it's not just about building. It's about belonging. Your support keeps this work alive. So please take a moment to give to your local public radio station. Thank you.
Give now to Radio Catskill during our fall fund drive at wjffradio.org.
Feel like you're just spinning in an endless whirlpool of information? We can help steady you.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, co-host of On the Media, and we point out where you should be paying attention and what you can afford to ignore. Using the media as a lens on our world, we reveal nuance and detail often missed by other outlets. So don't miss On the Media, Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
And welcome back, everyone, to the show being Curtain Call. I'm Tom Candela, your host. If you're just joining us, we've been spending the last, half hour or so, Jonathan, with Jonathan Charles Fox, discussing his upcoming one-man performance, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind. And that show is coming to the Hurlville Performing Arts Center for one night only, this Saturday night, July 11th at 8 p.m., and doors will open at 7 p.m. Now, before we get back to that conversation, I'd like to remind everyone, all you listeners out there, that Radio Catskill Summer Fun Drive is now underway. It began this morning, as a matter of fact. Your Gift provides fact-based local journalism, highlights the arts and culture of our region, and amplifies the voices, like Jonathan's, that make our community so unique. If you believe that these stories deserve to be heard, well, I really hope that you'll consider making a contribution tonight by visiting wjffradio.org. It's very easy. You go to that website, and you'll see the donate button. You just simply click on that donate button. So, now I want to get back to our conversation, Jonathan.
I'd just like to quickly point out, since Tango Cafe, of course, is attached to the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and just like last year, they have created two signature cocktails for us.
How neat.
For that night. There are other restaurants, of course, in town as well to support. We want to encourage people to support local businesses.
Local businesses and local theaters. And that's what this show's about, supporting local theater and local performers like yourself. Because Hurleyville is a beautiful little town and has a lot of fine little restaurants. So we were talking a little bit off air about your accompanied person.
Chuck Vassallo.
And how you kind of work together and how he sort of helps you, cues you in. If you're going off topic or if you're going too long or whatever it might be, of bringing you back in and onto the subject matter.
Okay. Well, and you even saw at Operation Jonathan, we got that sound effect of the of the machine. Just pressed it for me every time he felt he should be doing so. He is such a great help to me. And the very first time I worked with Chuck was very much on the fly. It was at the Forest Brook Playhouse. We did a show called Born in a Trunk. And I told all theater-related stories. And I do try to tie my stories into where I am, time and place. And I was looking for an accompanist, and my wonderful friend Franklin Trapp over at the Playhouse said, you know Chuck? Why don't you ask Chuck? And let's get together with Chuck. And I got together with Chuck, and he said, sure, that sounds like fun. And I've never done it without him since.
That's great. That's great. So you're a team.
Kind of. I got to tell you, unwittingly, he has stolen the spotlight on a number of occasions. The very first time I saw a video of one of the shows, Chuck is behind me. I don't know what's going on. His responses and reactions were so entertaining that he helped keep the audience there.
That's funny.
And that's why we do 90 minutes with no intermission.
You don't want to have to try to win the audience again after the break.
As I always say, Tom Candela, think of it as a conversation between good friends where I do most of the talking.
Yeah. And that's like this show. Although I do share the conversation.
Yeah.
Most of the times. I wanted to talk a little bit about going back a little bit now because both shows talks a lot about things in your life and certainly very personal things. And what I brought up in our first conversation last year is how you were, I used the term then, I think, reinventing yourself because you went from that childhood actor starting on Broadway to Hollywood calling, pulling you in over there.
Yeah.
And then soon Hollywood typecasting you.
Did what it does.
Hollywood almost turning on you at some point.
Absolutely.
That caused you to move back into New York City where you started writing.
Correct.
Your writing career began there. The writing career morphed into a photography career unexpectedly.
Completely.
By surprise.
Yep.
Become an award-winning photographer after that. So I don't know if the word reinventing is really the right word.
I think I'm a Renaissance man.
You are a Renaissance man, but a better word for it is how you've been able to transform yourself.
I got to tell you, it gets harder and harder the older you get.
I bet.
Every time you think you've hit the third act, the curtain rises again and you're doing something else.
Yeah.
And I feel very fortunate. It would be remiss myself if I didn't give a huge shout out to the folks at the award-winning River Reporter because they give me a very wide berth.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there for 17 years come July 4th, and they sit back and let me do not only what I want to do, but what I think I do best. And that has worked for everybody concerned for all these years. And I'm thankful to have them.
But does that resonate for you, though, that word transformation as opposed
it does. I mean, it's kind of like a phoenix rising from the ashes. Mm-hmm. I'm just tired of getting singed. So I wouldn't mind a little smoothness once in a while. Yeah. I have had a good smooth period lately. I'm just going through a little bit of a transformation now.
Yes, we know. We know that.
And it's funny because when all this came up, I have had a little bump in the road and a little bit of a hiccup going on in my life suddenly and without warning. And I was going to cancel this show. Mm. I was going to cancel Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind because I didn't think I could just take it all on or give anything my individual attention. And the inner voice, the one on the right shoulder said, don't do that. Do something that fills you creatively. Do what you were planning to do. Don't let anybody down. All of those things. While the devil on the other side is saying, just quit. Just don't do it. But I that's not me. I made a commitment to do it. And of course, I'm doing it full. I've gone in whole hog on this particular thing. It's not like I'm shirking it in any way whatsoever. Again, I think it's interesting, Tom, to get people to understand what I do. Not memorizing a script.
Right.
If you said to me today, I need you to do this in an hour, I could do it in an hour because it's all in my head.
Right.
It might be different than it will be on Saturday, July 11th. It might be different in different words and different order, but I could do it.
Yeah.
And that I do explain. People have come up to me after every show and said, how do you memorize all that? Oh, by not memorizing any of it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I do it. So I realized very quickly that I didn't want to bail on it in any way whatsoever. I wanted to do my own creative fulfillment. I wanted to do something that's fun. So, and people are thankfully looking forward to it.
Yeah. And so am I.
Thank you.
But that brings up another point. Even you just telling me what you just said now, there's a lot of optimism in the way you speak and the way you tell your stories, despite all the disappointments, despite all the transformations that you have had to go through in your life. You approach a lot of it, certainly in your performances and in your shows, with a huge degree of optimism. How do you maintain that?
It starts out being forced a little bit, I think.
Okay.
In my work, I find myself in different places with different groups of people, having different experiences all the time. It's one of the reasons I love what I do. It's never the same. Mm. Not unlike my shows. Never the same. I don't know that I would call it optimism per se, but I would call it, I have a strong sense of self. And fortunately, what has saved me all this time is a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can't laugh... If I can't laugh, I've got a serious problem. It's the only way I can approach things. Otherwise, you're crying.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that happens, too. That happens, too, in the shows. I mean, there was one point in the show where somebody was quite emotional on one of the tables listening to your story.
You're seeing more than I am. As a general rule, they're out there in the dark.
Yes,
and
of
not
course.
Only that, I go completely out of body when we start. I hit the stage, and I don't remember anything until I'm done. That's how I describe it, as an out-of-body experience. But... as you're talking about emotion and how it affects other people, and you've seen it affect me as well when I tell a story, and that's a good way to know that I haven't memorized and it's not a performance per se, I very often become verklempt myself. And I don't want to, and I don't not want to all at the same time, because the whole point is that we're having a conversation and I'm sharing intimate details of my life with people who may or may not be interested in them, but they're genuine. And that's why you see, and you did see at the show at the Arts Nest a couple of months ago, that I was overwhelmed a couple of times myself because it brings me back.
Of course.
When I'm telling the story, because it's true, it takes me there if I'm doing it properly. And sometimes it's an emotional journey.
Yeah. And genuine is an important word because it is coming from your heart and it is genuine. And I think that's where people really feel as you're feeling for it, because it's not made up. It's not performance. It's not. It really should be built as performance.
I can't put that on. I can't put that on. It just takes its own form naturally and organically. And if that leads to laughter, great. If it leads to maybe a tear or two, so be it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's never planned.
Yeah. It's great. It works well. So for this show, Close Encounter of the Jonathan Kind, it starts out with friendships.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked a little bit about that before the break, of how there was a total of 10 other people with yourself and how you were closely knit friends. Talk a little bit about that, those relationships. Because that affects how you experienced it together.
I'm glad you brought that up because, again, this was it was an extraordinary experience that nobody could possibly have predicted. But I had a crew. I had a posse. I was part of their posse. They were part of mine when we were all young actors looking to hit the big time in Hollywood. And as a group of tight friends, we used to get together and go camping at least once a year, always once a year on July 4th weekend. So the timing, again, is interesting. There were other times during the year that we would go camping, but July 4th was reserved for theme parties. One year we did a Close the Clash cocktail party. It was like, well, wear something striped and something checked and do this and do that and it'll be fun. We did a neo-romanticism party where there were pirates and ladies in big dresses on top of Catalina Island. I mean, it was really fun, and we thought we were incredibly clever and incredibly creative, and I think we probably were.
Yeah, it sounds like you were.
And it happened that for the July 4th trip to Catalina Island in 1982, I was assigned to pick the theme, and because E.T. was such a huge hit, I chose a salute to E.T. as to be our theme. And if you want to hear more about it, you'll have to come to the Performing Arts Center.
Yeah, we don't want to give it too much away, but how apropos that theme turned out to
be. Absolutely. I mean, it was an extraordinary turn of events.
So how did the experience, we'll segue into that experience without giving, again, too much information out about it. How did that affect the friendship afterward, the friendships afterwards?
That's a really good question. It split people up.
Did it?
It brought people together because we're all different people. Yeah, there were young people, we were all young people, maybe like dating, who were on that trip who wound up getting married. There were people who were married who wound up getting divorced. Not all of us are alive. That's what happens when you live long, deep lives. Not all of us are alive. My very best friend in the whole world was there. He's no longer active in the business, as I am fond of saying. There was an artist in the group who devoted the rest of his life to art connected to the subject matter.
Wow.
Interestingly, there was another writer in the group who kind of lost his mind and wound up writing what could only be described as a manifesto about his experience and what that meant to him and how it affected him. Me, the writer, chose to explore writing about this topic over and over and over again. It has infused my work repeatedly. I wrote a play. I wrote a play based on this.
Wow.
It's not good. Apparently it's not good because I did actually have a table reading of this play at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance years ago. They paid people to come in and read the play and do a table read. Everybody had a script. I collected all the scripts at the end and there were notes in it like, I hate this.
Really?
Or, what is this all about? Or, this guy's a lunatic. It was not really positive responses and it kind of shut me down. And I put it in a drawer and never went back to it, which wasn't cool.
Wow.
But it has affected my work.
Yeah.
My work as a photographer, I don't know. But it goes, I do a lot of astrophotography. So I'm sure that has something to do with it. I'm sure you've seen some of them on social media. I mean, I'm a stargazer from way back. I was then. I'm more so now. And I'm always looking up.
Interesting point, because that sparked a certain curiosity then.
Oh, it absolutely did. And you'll see, because we're friends on social media, I'll say eyes on the skies. It's been a lifelong interest, even before July 3rd, 1982, and I credit my grandfather, as I do for many things, with that interest. My first telescope, I was about 10, I think. And that also comes into play.
Wow. You bring up your grandfather. If I remember correctly, wasn't it your grandfather who first got you interested in theater as
Absolutely.
Well?
Yeah, he was highly creative, very talented, and really brought out those qualities in me.
Wasn't he a performer too?
He was a band leader, big band leader.
Okay, yeah. So that's how you got on that stage the first time.
That's correct. That was all him. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. But this curiosity, it's not just limited to your stargazing. I think if you do look at some of your work, you also photograph a lot of nature work.
I do.
And again, as I remember the story, when you first discovered photography.
By accident.
By accident, you took a picture. Was it a skunk or a baby something?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. Skunk? Yeah, it was a skunk family. Yeah. I just passed a skunk today and he took me right back.
Did you say hello?
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
Well, but that curiosity has also been a part of your life. And I think has driven a lot of the, it appears to me, has driven a lot of your direction or your transformation of being curious, of being investigative, whether it be you were an actor, becoming curious about now writing your own scripts or writing your own stories or writing your own journalism. That curiosity then turned into the photography, because initially they told you how to take pictures and you're like, oh, what?
Right. Well, you remember everything.
But then you actually transformed there, because you did find something that connected you to the art form.
Oh, I'm very grateful. Photography enriched my life and still does to such a great extent that it's something I sort of live for now. But, and I don't want to get emotional because you're talking about this, and I have to give a shout out just in case she can hear us. My mother, my grandfather's daughter, mm-hmm. who really instilled that in me. And I still have the book, the first book I think I ever read by myself, my mother gave me, which was Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. Mm. And there's an inscription in it in my mother's beautiful, beautiful handwriting. And it says, "May you always have the ability to step through the looking glass into your own world."
Wow. Beautiful.
I wanted to have that tattooed on my arm, and she really did not want me to do that. And I still have it. I still said I'm still going to do it because they can do her handwriting
sure.
and copy it. In full, it said, "May you always have the ability to step into your own world of imagination." So she really fostered that in me as well. My father was not so thrilled about it because he wasn't interested in me pursuing the arts. He wanted me to go into the business and be a jeweler. That was never going to happen.
Right, right.
But I remember the exact moment I was taking a picture of something for work, and it wasn't the River Reporter. I was at a different paper to begin with when I was here. It was a paper called The Town Crier, which was based in Livingston Manor. But they said to me, "Well, you have to go out and take pictures. We don't have photographers here." And I remember the first time I took a picture of something and said, "Oh, I think I like photography." Hmm. And that has driven me all these years for decades now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could tell I was recently looking through the Delaware Valley Opera Company. They recently had their gala.
Correct.
Or is it gala? And I was looking at the pictures and I go, "I bet Jonathan took these pictures."
I did.
And then when I had them on, I said, "Was Jonathan taking the pictures?" They said, "Yes." So,
yeah, yeah. One of the things I love about small town life, for a better lack of a better description, is I feel the same way about local artists who have a very particular point of view. And when I go to an art gallery and say, let's say it's a group show, so there's like eight artists represented, and I can say, "Oh, that's Bill Landau."
Yeah,
or that's Maureen Neville. Any of those things, I love being able to identify that. So you saying that to me is a great compliment. I don't know that one can certainly say the same thing in the same way. And there are a bunch, I won't say a lot, but there's a small coterie of very talented photographers in the region. And I always maintain, I think the only thing that separates us, and sometimes we're doing the same thing, taking pictures of the same exact mm-hmm. thing at the same exact time. And I could look at them, say, "Oh, well, I know which one is mine."
Yeah.
But especially you're talking about the gala and the fact that I do like to photograph parties and people having a good time. I think the only thing that separates me from the rest of the crew is that I have an ability to get people to relax and enjoy themselves and smile, genuinely smile for something. If I can crack a joke and they smile, or if I have my secret weapon is right over here.
Yes.
It's that dog named Gidget. Follow her on Instagram and Facebook. That dog named Gidget. I always say, especially kids who are nervous or even adults who aren't comfortable with a camera, look at the dog and they immediately beam.
Yeah.
That's when you go click.
Yeah. Man, she really helps you out there.
She sure does. Yeah. She's my partner in crime.
But it's a good point what you brought up about photography, because earlier we mentioned in your writing how you have a voice. I think that even in an art form like photography, there is a voice that you can recognize, a style, if you will, that you see and you say, "That's probably so-and-so."
Absolutely. A creative voice.
There's a creative voice.
And that,
that
is
you
what
could
separates
recognize.
The men from the boys. I agree.
Yes, yes.
I agree with that.
So you have some of that. And
thank
I see
you.
That in some of your photographs.
I wish I could talk to you every day. You're good for me.
Some of the work that you do. And I know you do it for a lot of the theater companies. Forsberg Playhouse is your baby.
I am the house photographer at the Forsberg Playhouse. It's my home away from home. It's my happy place because theater is so important to me. And I'm very grateful to Franklin Trapp for bringing me on when he purchased the place. And we've been working together for 13 years.
Yep.
I have photographed every single show. But I will say, too, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I love theatrical photography. Of course, it's my love, theater. And it's a very unique skill set, one that I did not naturally come to, that I had to really learn how to operate under theater lighting and effects, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I love the fact that my photos will live on long past me, connected to the theater. My mother's jewelry is at the theater. I have props that are being used at the theater. Just last week, prop master Lorelei Davis came up to me and said, "That's your chandelier."
Oh, nice.
So I love that I'll be in some way a small part, but they make my photos look really, really good.
Yeah. So, Steven Spielberg.
Spielberg.
I did watch the documentary, and there's a discussion there that you have about approaching Steven Spielberg at a party
Happenstance.
Happenstance. I mean, I wish I could be at a party where Steven Spielberg happened to be there.
We did have a conversation, and I'm going to be sharing it on Saturday, July 11th at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. I felt fortunate that, I mean, I just happened to be in the same room at the same time. We were at an event, and he very kindly agreed to discuss the topic with me for a brief period of time. And I asked him a few questions that are pertinent to this topic, and he had some very interesting answers. It's not the centerpiece of the story, but it is a nice anecdote to go with it.
Yeah, anecdote, exactly. But did his response bring you comfort?
I think it was a good question that I asked him, and it was a fascinating response.
Okay. Okay.
And I will say, Close Encounters of the Third Kind is at the top of my top 10 list of films of all time.
Loved it. Loved it.
I can share this with you. There is something in place. There is a theory. And if you Google it, you'll find some information about it. And that's called the readiness factor, which is the name of the play that I wrote. And the readiness factor is a theory that world governments and powers that be had gotten together at some point, and I'm going to pinpoint that as 1947 in the Roswell incident, to halt any information that was going out there into the world for a number of reasons. Religion, we were talking about the Pope.
Sure.
Organized religion is afraid that if we knew things that they allegedly know, it would be the collapse of organized religion, hence the Pope's commentary, that it could cause panic. Let's say that there is something out there that we don't know anything about, and I certainly don't know anything about. It might unite the world to have information that maybe there really is life out there and we're not the center of the universe, because we're not. And I think all of that is very, very interesting. And the readiness factor, the theory claims that from 1947 on, the perception of what alien life might be, extraterrestrial life, life on other planets, all those things morphed. And instead of movies like Mars Attacks,
right,
we started seeing movies like E.T. And maybe if we were aware that there was life elsewhere in the universe, it wouldn't be the end of our existence. Not scary, maybe a good thing.
Maybe a good thing.
And Spielberg is a part of that.
Well, if you are just joining us, what you hear in the background there is that dog, Gidget, who happens to be part of the show as well.
Always.
Always with you, always by your side. Yeah. Yes, she is a service dog.
Correct.
We do know that. We did learn more about that at Operation Jonathan.
Correct.
Certainly. But she's a lot of fun, and she brings a lot of charm to your performances or to your
conversations. Despite her antics behind me, I was at Hurleyville last year. She was behind me, and I was telling a heart-wrenching story, and people were laughing. I'm like, what the heck are people laughing at? And she was clowning around behind me.
Yeah, she's upstaging it.
Yeah, what did W.C. Fields say? Never work with children or animals.
Children or animals, exactly. But she is part of the performance. Do you think that what she's doing even now is looking after you?
Oh, absolutely. She's my nurse. She's my nurse 24/7. I do have her for, she's a medical alert dog. She is a seizure alert dog. I wasn't born with epilepsy, but I did have an accident which caused it because I had a brain injury. And she is my second. Dharma the Wonder Dog, the most magnificent dog on the face of the planet, was my first. And she was also incredibly popular here in the Upper Delaware River region.
Yes.
And Gidget had a really tough pause to fill. And she has done a remarkable job of doing so. And she's Havanese. People often ask me, is that a Shih Tzu? She's Havanese. They're the national dog of Cuba. It means Little Havana.
Okay.
Which is a great way to remember.
I didn't know that.
They're hypoallergenic. They're non-shedding. Since they were bred about 150 years ago, specifically to be companion dogs, they make excellent candidates for service dogs. Because her life is all about taking care of me.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And she was just looking at me like, okay, like she's your agent saying, he's got another gig in 10 minutes, so let's get this going.
Yeah. Because I could talk forever. Yeah.
Let's get this moving. Okay, so we got the show coming up, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind. It is going to be performed on July the 11th at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center.
Doors open at 7.
There you go.
Curtain is at 8, and it is one night only. And tickets are for sale at hpacny.org. If you go to their calendar section, just hit July 11th, you'll see a picture of me and my dog, the very one we're talking about.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Final question, I think. We'll see.
Yeah.
Goes. So again, without giving anything away.
Yeah.
Someone who comes to see Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind.
Yeah.
Expecting an evening all about UFOs. What do you hope they discover instead?
Well, it's never all about the subject matter at hand, is it?
It's not about the title.
That's part of the beauty of it. As I don't know what to expect until people start walking in the door. I do have an idea of where I want it to go. That can change drastically. Again, I think to challenge myself, this is more of a one-story story that has a few little offshoots of stories involved. But again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm looking forward to a Q&A session. And when I met with the tech people over there, I said, we need to allot time for this within our 90-minute period. I'm looking to create a sense of time and place in a mildly theatrical sort of way. Is it a yuck fest? I don't know.
Could be.
It could be. Okay. I'd like to think that the subject matter itself, even though we're being mildly mysterious about it, will intrigue people. I think the most important thing that I want people to understand, and that you have made clear over and over again, that I never get up and tell made-up stories. This is a true story. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I want to share with a wider audience than I have in the past. My good friends know it. But I will say, too, and I think it's interesting, Tom, in 1982, when all of this went down, the basis of the story that I'm going to be telling, the group of 11 of us made a pact to never tell a living soul.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, because back then, you were a nut job. It wasn't like...
That is 100% true. Yeah. And to whet people's appetite, I will say, because we were a team of young actors, there were a couple of people in the group who went on to be incredibly famous, and I'm not talking about me, people who went on to great fame and fortune, and they didn't want that affecting their careers either. Not only that, we were 100% sure, as you just pointed out, that nobody would believe us. And it wasn't until very recently, when I had to ask people for permission to do so, that people released their hold on that.
Was that a unanimous decision?
Thankfully, it was. There were no dissenters.
Wow.
And for the most part, I think, and we will talk about who those people were, one of them said, it's been a long time. I think I'm okay with that.
Right.
Another one went on to have a career that's kind of tied into it. There were some people there, again, remember we were all quite young, who went on to have huge careers. And that's part of the story, too.
Yeah, that's great. So a lot to be learned coming to the show on July 11th.
Tickets are on sale now.
Tickets are on sale now. By the way, they can get those tickets if they go to, I think it's hpacny.org.
Correct. They're only $20. I want everybody to be able to come without even thinking about it. It's not about making money. It's about having a great time together.
Yes, and you will have a great time with Jonathan. It's always fun to sit down and talk with you. But also, it's always fun to watch you and hear your stories because there are so many intriguing stories. And this is certainly one of them. I think I'm intrigued. And I know more than my listening audience knows.
Yes, you do.
But I'm still intrigued and can't wait to come and see you, Jonathan.
I'm excited. I'm thrilled that you're going to be there. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody else there. This is one of those times where I'm going to be asking the technician to bring up the lights so I can see who's out there so we can have a conversation about it.
Very good. And that's Jonathan Charles Fox, ladies and gentlemen. And That Dog Gidget, talking about his upcoming show, Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind. Jonathan, I want to thank you for making the trip into the studio today. It's been another great conversation. I enjoyed the time together.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy our time together, whether it's on the mic or not. And I truly appreciate you having us in.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jonathan.
Well, Jonathan always delivers, not only on the page or through the lens of a camera, but even in this simple act of just sitting across from him and having a conversation. He always brings a lifetime of stories and observations, humor, heart, and theatrical instinct. And I'm very grateful he shared some of that with us today here on Curtain Call. If you'd like to learn more about Close Encounters of the Jonathan Kind or purchase tickets for sure, it's a one-night-only performance, as I mentioned, Saturday, July 11th at 8 p.m., it's over at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and you can visit HPAC's website at hpacny.org for complete ticket information. So before we go tonight, as I do every night, here's a look at just some of the wonderful theater performing arts and activities that are happening throughout our region in the coming days and week. The Delaware Valley Opera, that's the Delaware Valley Opera Company, they open their 40th anniversary season with Gilbert and Sullivan's beloved classic, The Mikado. Performances take place Saturday evening, July 11th and the 18th at 7 p.m., with Sunday matinees on July 12th and the 19th at 2 p.m. For tickets and information, visit DelawareValleyOpera.com. Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop presents Jekyll and Hyde the Musical with performances Friday and Saturday evening, July 10th and 11th,
And again on July 17th and 18th at 7:30 p.m., along with Sunday matinees on July 12th and the 19th at 2 p.m. Ticket information is available through onthestage.tickets. And by the way, next week on the show, next Monday night, there'll be a special broadcast, or a special curtain call broadcast, I should say, celebrating the life of Harold Tye. Please do join me for that next week. And over at the Forestburg Playhouse, the Bridges of Madison County continues through Sunday, July the 12th, with performances Tuesday through Saturday, and a Wednesday matinee and a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m., I believe it is. And then right after that, July the 14th and running through the 26th over at the Forestburg Playhouse will be Dear Evan Hansen, a fantastic musical. Also opening this weekend, the Playhouse at Museum Village presents Neil Simon's hilarious comedy, Rumors. Opening performances are Saturday, July 11th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, July 12th at 2 p.m. And that production continues through July 26th with Friday and Saturday evening performances and Sunday matinees. For tickets, visit attheplayhouse.org. And I think I forgot to mention Forestburg Playhouse's web address at fbplayhouse.org for ticket information on the Bridges of Madison County and Dear Evan Hansen. If Shakespeare is more your style, well, the Cornerstone Theater Arts presents Macbeth. It's over at the Salesian Park in Goshen, New York. Performances take place Saturday and Sunday, July 11th and 12th, as well as July 18th and 19th, with all performances beginning at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. And by the way, admission is free. Visit cornerstonetheaterarts.org for additional information on that show. Also in Hurleyville, this weekend, the Sullivan County Museum presents Closets. Performance beginning Saturday, July 11th at 2 p.m. at 7 p.m. and Sunday, July the 12th at 2 p.m. Looking further ahead, the Phoenicia Playhouse will hold auditions for Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein. That's coming up on Wednesday and Thursday, July the 15th and 16th at 5 p.m. It goes until 8 p.m. over at the Playhouse, located at 10 Church Street in Phoenicia, New York. The production will be presented this October as part of the Playhouse's 50th anniversary season. For audition information, visit PhoeniciaPlayhouse.com. And beginning July the 30th, Farm Arts Collective presents Dream on the Farm number 7, Johnny Appleseed, a historical fantasia. Performances for that show run Thursday through Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. through August 9th. And for tickets and additional information, as well as a lot of information about other things that are happening there on the farm at the Will West Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania, visit farmartscollective.org. Now, before I leave you tonight, one final reminder that Radio Catskill Summer Fun Drive began and will be underway for the next 2 weeks. If you want to keep programs like Curtain Call, for instance, along with other local and national news and music and the many voices that make Radio Catskill such an important part of our community, please consider making a contribution tonight. Donating to Radio Catskill is one of the best ways to not only support this station so we can continue to provide our fact-based local journalism and outstanding local programming, but it's also a great home for the arts throughout our region. And many, many people listen to our station. I hope just as many people help support it. You can make your secure online contribution anytime by visiting wjffradio.org. So my thanks once again to Jonathan Charles Fox, and thank you to my listeners for spending time with me this evening. Until next Monday at 7 o'clock, I'm Tom Candela, and this has been Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. So good night, everyone, and I'll see you all at the theater.
You know, you may not be hearing a lot about it in the headlines this summer, but public radio is still facing some serious challenges. and they demonstrate that we need listeners like you now more than ever. So stand with us now. Trustworthy local news matters. Community connection matters. And public radio deserves a strong future. If you haven't given, please make your donation. Give now at WJFFradio.org or on the Radio Catskill mobile app.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, the big bands go Latin. There's music for Volcano fans, and the Stolen Idols play Les Baxter. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.